You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey there. As you may have noticed, today's episode is not an episode of 13, but instead, it's the first episode of the newest season of Hemophobia. We love this show, and we shared the first episode of season one with you last year. But no worries if you haven't heard season one yet. Hemophobia is an anthology horror podcast, and each season tells a new multi-chapter story. These stories are bloody and visceral, and horrific in every sense of the word. But it's not the blood or the gore that will keep you listening. And it's not the spine-chilling terror that will keep you up at night. It's the quiet dread that settles into your everyday life. The understanding that these fictional nightmares are a reflection of the real, unmitigated, and unanswerable horror that permeates each corner of the human experience. And we already know that's your jam, because you're here. You'll hear some familiar voices throughout this season, including myself, Brooke Jeanette, as well as 13 alums Josiah O. Knight, Kayla Temshiv, and Mason Amadeus. And you'll also hear Soren Narnia of Knife Point Horror. But you don't have to take my word for it. Just keep listening, and we'll let the story speak for itself. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
House of Actors is for James Dupuy. For the work I go to finish, and the rest that you have earned. Time silently slams the door, breaking thoughts said before, sparing pain to mask the kill, battling hope beyond the will. Mercy waits while dangers sleep, rage and waste below the keep. Mercy's lost in those who wait beneath Satan's unholy gate. Untitled poem by James Dupuy.
Thank you. Holland.
The elm wouldn't be a tree for much longer. A few shriveled, blackened leaves were all it had left, bark bare, skinned by the hand of nature. It waved a little in the wind. It shook in its own withering.
Shit, man. The fuck is he?
Stephen looked at the yard. There was no grass to call it that, just a length of concrete affront the slender house. Past that was Sickle Street, rugged, scarred, and past that houses half derelict and rotten, shattered window panes and doors caved inside frames, dilapidated brick facades cut to less than one story by neglect. In the night it was lightless, colorless. The only interruption, hanging from the unkept yard of the condemned house next door, was a skinless elm. Stephen leaned against the rail of the second floor balcony. He rubbed his hands together, failed to warm. Beside him, Wiley flicked a cigarette into the dark. Smoke mingled with breath as he spoke.
That bitch can say whatever he wants about it. It was one hit, not like I snatched it out of his mouth or anything.
Yeah.
And not like he hasn't done the same thing to me like 100 times. God can't keep his fucking hands to himself and then throws a hissy fit. Shit.
He has a tendency to misremember.
Well, fuck it. I mean, what the hell? It's a dick move.
Stephen looked at his fingernails.
King of revisionist history. Swear to God.
Maybe he just remembered it wrong.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that. Bullshit, he doesn't give two fucks about me or you.
No.
Whatever. Jeffrey does the same thing.
Does he?
You kidding me? Of course he does. Dude will turn around and tell you, like, I just want a G, like, just a G, and then when you ask where your eighth is, he'll say some shit like, what, you said I could have it.
Guess so.
Yeah, well, not exactly a rare phrase in this house, anyway.
Stephen looked at the street. He tried not to shiver. A plastic bag blew down the road, catching on a half-collapsed brick wall, then on the stub of a dead tree. Somewhere a car door slammed shut and there were voices. He heard wind in the rattling bones of branches. Felt it in his own.
God, where is he? Sent him out 3 goddamn hours ago.
Should we call him?
Yeah, there's an idea. Let's give Jeffrey a ring while he's out of Karen's place.
Is he... Do you think he's safe?
Is he safe? Try is he sober. Probably sat down to have a bowl with Karen, or 2, or 3, after which it'll be plenty easy for Karen to rip us off. That is why I should have gone. Fucking knew it.
A red glow lit the houses across the street. A car stalked down the road, its headlights off. It moved slow. Deliberate.
Abandon all hope, ye who enters here.
Dude!
Oh, breathe, pussy. It's just a car.
Yeah, a car in this part of town.
And?
You don't know who's driving. It could be Karen or some...
Karen? You think the spirit moved him to come deliver our shit to us?
No, but... I don't know...
But what? Hop out with a machine gun, shoot through our windows, Gran Torino style?
Wiley drew another cigarette. Steven looked down.
Such a ball of nerves. Only one thing that can fix that.
Stop it.
Oh, sorry, I'll just stop being so goddamn generous and friendly if that's what you want so bad.
Tonight's not the night.
Say that every night, man. In what, 4 or 5 months now? I'm starting to believe this day ain't coming.
Who knows?
Steven turned away. Wiley continued to smoke. The wind moved over Steven, incising, chill. His body remained.
It wasn't Bud she was on, you know.
I'm aware.
I know, I'm just saying, if that's a factor, you know, it's not like it's the same.
Okay.
So damn sensitive anytime anyone brings it up, Jesus.
They didn't speak. Steven felt Wiley's eyes. He adjusted his glasses.
You need to learn thy substances. But even close to coke, certainly not the stuff she had.
I know.
A lot to learn.
Yeah.
Well, don't you worry. We'll ease you in.
Ease me in?
Yeah, you heard me.
I see.
Steven looked at Wiley. Wiley turned back and smirked without teeth. His beard stretched with it, thick and hostile as his hair was, where every clotted lock was a spine like that of a hedgehog. Yet it was closer to the mane of a dragon. Greasy. Adverse. Bushy eyebrows thickened the brutality of his face, a harsh face that nevertheless grinned at Steven. Pale blue eyes formed tiny half-moons. The head lay at an amiable tilt. Then Wiley turned back toward the street, and the smile fell.
Ready or not, it's coming. Best get ready.
Steven watched his mouth move. Watched it shape the words. Watched it refuse to retreat from any started sentence.
Just... tonight's not the night.
Yeah, I heard you the first time. You know, I know some folks would be itching to be you. First time for free and with good company to boot. Of course, all these people are my clientele, so... I guess it's a given, but still.
I know.
You know, it'll be good shit too, man. Only primo de ganja. I've got you. Besides, who else would you want your first time to be with?
Steven watched the street continue the emptiness. The world only got colder. The elm's branches clattered, ribbed grayly out of the black that pressed fast against everything. He turned to Wiley. His eyes briefly moved over Stephen, as if to find something. and they turned away, seeming to have found it.
You're lucky you're cute. You got Jeffrey beat there.
Thank you, Wiley.
And speaking of...
A distant shape approached the house, short and bearded, head obscured under a black beanie, cradling a large paper sack.
Finally!
Wiley turned from the railing back into the house. Stephen followed at a distance, past his room and down the stairs into the den, then out the front door. Jeffrey approached from the sidewalk, into the thin glow of the porch light. It shined on his features, his face an accretion of grime, glistening on his cheeks and lips, seeping in his beard. Wiley stepped down from the front stoop, arms wide.
Where the fuck were you? You take an extra hour to polish him off, or...
Well, fuck off. He just felt chatty today. It's okay, though. We got our money's worth for damn sure.
My God, what's all in here?
Care package, he calls it.
Care package? Christ, is he a drive-thru or something? How much?
Just what I left with. It was feeling nice today, I guess.
Apparently. Jesus Christ, look at all this.
Yeah, that's Reds, Coke, Oxy, Molly, too. Shit, might be a little bud in there for all I know.
Fucking A. Shit, I think I just found out what we're doing this Saturday.
Wiley and Jeffrey went back toward the house.
Shit, I ain't even waiting on this. Motherfucker.
No, hey, now, wait for me. No, fuck that, wait for me, wait.
Jeffrey hastened to the living room table. Wiley drew an elongated, experienced fingernail. Lined the powder up. Stephen watched them through the open door. Still outside. Their eyes were prematurely vacant. Their hands automatic with haste. He watched them sift and arrange it. He watched them as if doing so would keep them that way, would retain their recognizability. It was all too late anyway. All lain in familiar course, repeating again in front of him, not lessened by repetition, though each one seemed to lessen him. He looked at their skin and wondered what was changeable. He looked at the powder and tried to think of what wasn't. He couldn't. He looked up at the house itself, at the skeletal red and gray construction, three slender stories high, cloaked in the tight space between two bedraggled buildings that sat littered with cracked windows and missing roof tiles. He looked at it, then looked away, turned back to face the warmthless road, to face Sickle Street, looking at it for no reason other than that it was there, and consistently refused to be anywhere else. Anything else. He looked again at the houses, half derelict and rotten, at the shattered window panes and doors caved inside frames, at the dilapidated brick facades only relatively deader than the house behind him. Their house. Stephen's house. Each flare licked higher out of the fire pit. Stephen watched the crudely cut wood, watched the light on his glasses. He was too close to the fire, but remained there. Remained in view of the dimly lit faces around him, distant gargoyle statues. Sitting where the light couldn't reach.
Yes, it's fresh. We just fucking got it today. Death Star shit. Want me to put sprinkles on it? We have some in the kitchen.
Fuck off. Just saying, a dealer should know when he's got good shit.
Guarantee it's fine. I got like a whole other zip or something on top of this just for a sane of supply. For tomorrow.
Wiley inhaled from a private brown blunt. Exhaled. Marcus looked down. Firelight bounced off his bald scalp, recolored his white, skull-adorned jacket. He looked back at Wiley.
And Molly?
Yeah, Marcus, we got that too. Jeffrey fetched it from Karen last night. Enough for us and, you know, any curious birds.
You assume you mean bitches.
Why, Marcus, do you kiss your marijuana with that mouth? I resent such words in this house.
So, you mean, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Jeffrey accepted a blue translucent pipe, live and glowing orange, pressed it to his chapped lips.
That Val chick coming again?
Last I checked, yeah. Bringing that entourage, too. Or she better be, at least.
Fuck yeah. I need me another swing.
Well, hope it works for you better than last time.
Fuck you, man. That's just not cool.
Chill out, will you? Honestly, it'd be a bit of a miracle if I even remembered her name that late in the night.
Jeffrey stared at Wiley. The grease around his reddening eyes stretched thin. His gaze sharpened. Then he looked down at the pipe in his hands, brought the lighter down. Stephen watched the flame surge, travel through each individual chrome. A few crackles, pale, wispy smoke frothing off the brim. A puff, prematurely exhaled, and pulled back down into the gorging flame. The breath pulled it in. The breath held it there like gravity. Then it died, and Jeffrey blew a thick cloud into the air. Stephen looked up at the sky, at a sable wall of clouds that might have been the lack of a sky, unlit by any dying or dead lights. Eons swirled away invisibly behind it all. He saw them above him, and far from him. He saw himself absent from them. His view was interrupted by the pipe in Percy's hand.
Steven, man, you want to hit this? It's rolling.
Among the dead light, the pipe was ignited. Did that make it alive?
Flooding the place that night.
That they were.
Stephen shook his head.
Remember their own goddamn
I'm good.
All right, Marcus.
And tomorrow gonna be the fucking sequel. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, let's not let this shit be a vending machine.
Huh?
Marcus, I really do want to follow you here. Can you elaborate?
The fuck off, man. You know what I mean. I'm just saying, like, we gotta keep at least some of this shit for us, man.
Good lord, it'll be fine, Marcus.
Yeah, heard that one before. I mean, it's our shit, for fuck's sake.
Marcus, bro, Marcus, dude, settle down, smoke a while, chill.
I'm just saying, it's only fair, like, that we get first dibs.
We?
Marcus's teal eyes contracted, sharpened the point of a needle. He looked away, then back, then away.
Oh. Yeah, we. That's what I'm saying. Just want to make sure we're not losing nothing.
Losing nothing.
Percy's black V-neck buried him in the shadows, and his orange curls mimicked the fire.
What is lost that is not there?
Percy blew out smoke rings, cloaking his glazed eyes before turning them to the sky. He ran a thin, thoughtful hand through his curls.
Are you gonna give us any more to work with, or...
Percy turned back, lips pursed in a smile.
A girl loss to another man. A compound lost to another mouth. But it's all in cycles, man. It doesn't discriminate vessels.
Should I ask what doesn't discriminate, vessels?
A grin, bright with excitement.
What indeed is it? How does one characterize that nameless and eternal incentive?
Oh, here we go again.
See, you and Jeffrey, you two work together. You share the business. You two are the new priests. You bring all the others back to the elements from which they strayed. They rejected the elements. Like our government, too. Like the people of Israel, man. And so you bring the elements back to them. There is no stronger bond in existence. And it's all because of the earth. Just like this girl. Mary the Beach Victoria.
Close enough.
The elements. They took her where they needed her. It's all the earth. It's all from the same earth that gave us this grass.
Yeah, the same grass that you've been holding for three hits too long? Did the earth give you that, or is that us?
I'm just saying. The earth will give you what you seek. And it always will, man. Just consider the dolphins.
You're just gonna stay on this shit till it fucking dies, aren't you?
Ah, but how can it die if it never wasn't? You see?
Oh, my fucking
Percy,
God.
I'm going to ask you as a friend to please stop talking.
Steven gets it.
Steven looked up at Percy. His eyes were thin, red. His lips were laying in a thin, perpetual smile. He looked at Stephen with something like knowledge, but it wasn't. It was something nobody else saw, yet it was closer to blindness than it was to anything else.
Sure, Percy.
I know you do. You and me are the same. We're all same.
Same. Same. Stephen nodded even though he didn't try to. Same. Word felt stuck against the surface of his glasses, buried in the light of the fire. Same. He saw Wiley bring the blunt to his face. The lone orange dot. Jeffrey exhaled a plume, then leaned back, his face lapsing. His parched lips hung open. He looked at Stephen with half-lowered eyelids. Something like a smile etched on one half of his face. But Stephen didn't know the eyes. They had become so familiar, and he still didn't know them. No matter who it was. No matter which one it was. They were not the kind of eyes that he ever got used to. So he turned away from them. Looked at the fire pit. At the light glinting still on his eyes. Was like air, or that which had replaced the air. It pressed all the space from the living room, from the house, pressed it out of everything and everyone. Stephen felt it in his chest like a hand, feeling him, a pulse to replace his own. It was all he felt other than the wall behind him, to which he held himself. Bound. What he might have heard was lost in the bass. What he might have felt was not there. Above him were weakly strung Christmas lights, and back them the shine of alternating, feverish colors, gleaming from cheap rave lights. Everything their glow didn't touch was black enough to not be there. And beneath the lights, a sight at once one and several. The sweat-plastered hair, the frayed fragments of flannel, the ink-inscribed skin, the raised foam cups and fingers with torn nail colors. Men in beanies and oversized Baja hoodies. Women in ripped remains of denim and lace. Wandering bloodshot eyes lined in black. Tongues slipping precariously out of mouths. The blind stumbling between invisible bodies buried in collective silhouette. Swaying. Swaying. Feet on the ground until they went high. Attempts at choreographed motions despite the lack of all control. Slender arms extended into the air and moved in a dance as with themselves. Eyes beneath them were half closed and half red and half buried in mascara. Mouths were wide, smiling open. Pores were profuse in sweat. Amid the swaying, they looked sometimes into each other's eyes. In the dark light, they may have been looking at nothing. The house was barely wide enough to even house it all. The living room carpet compromising for a dance floor. Stephen stood in a far corner, back against one wall and hand brushing the other. He felt it. He felt the beat. Felt it stagger his heart. Alternating tempo. Just too early. Right on time. Just too late. The bodies and hands and heels gyrated in time. Perhaps their own time. He turned away. Turned anywhere else. Looked out the window. The shutters of the front windows were as closed as was possible. Long since broken. Even shattered in some places. The street outside the window was a lightless black anyway. An invisible room that was just as well an extension of the house. Decrepit, untenanted. No one there to look inside. Nothing outside to look out to. There was nothing for him to look out to. All that existed was the inside of that house. That house and its broken window panes and broken clocks and cracks in the walls and interminable cries that couldn't be heard over the bass. Stephen moved, pressed through the haze of sweat and vodka breath. A soaked, inert body fell backward onto him, then rolled off of him and onto the couch, laughing without syllable as she struggled to rise, feet too numb, arms too weak. He sidled around the couch, past it and behind it into the hallway. Along it opened five doors, each blaring a different color of hypersaturated light, the hallway itself red. He passed Wiley's bedroom, the bathroom, the door to the staircase, turned left into the indigo light of the kitchen. The black light on the ceiling lit darkness with more darkness, mired the faces of Wiley, Jeffrey, and three girls, two of whom leaned back against the counter and finger-dipped a shared bag of pale dust. The red-headed third, holding a plastic cup, was beside Jeffrey,
beside Wiley.
That's how it is, huh?
I don't think it's...
What would you have us
it's
do?
It's different, any different from...
Telling us how to live in our own house, huh?
Hey, that's not what I...
Yeah, real nice. You keep coming to our house and then give us this lip about it.
Oh, I ain't giving you none of my lip.
Well, not yet.
What?
Jeffrey's eyes winced shut and his head bowed. In the electric shadow, it could almost have been pain. Features muted, rigid and numb. He raised his face, smiling up at the black light. slapped a clumsy hand over his beanie-clad forehead.
Fucking the window on the second floor is fucking busted in that. In the corner, there's the fucking that hole basically in like the living room wall.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention the heating fucking box. The heating unit thing is on the fritz, too. And the landlord ain't doing shit. How do you want me to fucking to fix that?
Money. I think that's the way you do it.
No, sweetheart. You know what we spend all our money on.
She turned to Wiley. Her eyes followed his fingers as well as they could. Watched them retrieve a small bag of white pills. Wiley looked down at them. Smirked into the dark.
Never done Molly?
No.
Come here.
She came to Wiley's side as he fumbled the bag open. Jeffrey's features went slack. Blank. His mouth was a flat line. The indigo seemed to cover him completely. Then he drew a bag of white powder from his hoodie pocket. He began lining it up on the counter.
Hey, ladies, let's get around three in here. We gotta get on this shit. Call it my private stock. Fucking, let's do it.
The two came to the counter. A bend, a finger on one nostril. A hand sliding up her leg. Stephen receded from the kitchen. He turned back toward the living room, met immediately by Percy.
Stephen! Where are you going?
Nowhere. I didn't...
Good. Go over here.
Percy pulled Stephen by the collar, gripped drunkenly insistent. Stephen saw that he was holding Marcus with the other hand, lollygagging in a black hoodie streaked with red Japanese characters around a gaping serpent. Percy pulled them both forward, stumbled against every nearby surface. They pivoted into Wiley's bedroom, lit a violent purple, its door already open. On the bed was a black-haired girl, wearing a torn flannel across her chest and sitting next to Sullivan. In the dimly lit smoke, Stephen could barely see Sullivan's face, soft and puppyish, eyes sunken in a black outer ring, his hair a fistful of greased roots. Stephen was yanked firmly, then loosely, then firmly, then altogether released as Percy slid down the wall.
Shush. Just matching the Earth's movements, you feel? Cosmic choreography.
Moving up, which helps, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I'm the kind of guy who thinks there's something more to things, you know?
You know, you seem like you're special, like different.
Special. You've used that word, but no one else seems to agree. Only reward is just like loneliness and shit. It's just like, it's just constant, just constantly having to wonder, you know, how am I gonna wake up tomorrow? Like, do I even like the person I turned out to be? Like, am I just the kind of person who just deserves to be alone?
Oh, honey, no. You don't deserve to be alone. You, like, totally deserve. Deserve somebody? I know it.
Sullivan turned, trained gloomy raccoon eyes onto her, slid his hand onto her thigh.
Do you mean that? You believe that I deserve someone?
Yeah. Of course. Of course I do.
Come, children. Let us sit and resume where we left off.
Percy lowered them by their shoulders, intentionally or by the hinge of his grip. They sat on the hardwood floor, and his hands moved from their shoulders to their knees. Between them was a towering bong, surrounded by lighters and fixtured with three hoses. Percy grabbed a hose, then one of the lighters off the ground. He brought the flame to the copper stem, sucked the hose.
Now, Marcus, please repeat for our brethren what you last said.
Shit, man. I don't even remember what I said, bro.
Very well, then. I shall relay it. Marcus said that he thought all actions are not those of individuals, but that of a greater being. The all-controlling hand.
Fuck. That ain't what I said, man. I can't...
Marcus ran a flame-tattooed hand up against his cheek, sealing his laughter. His eyes were almost closed. His eyebrows were limp lines. Steven eyed the third hose, unused, looking at him.
So?
What did he mean by that?
What did he mean by that?
It sounds kind of theistic, I guess.
Theistic, indeed, Steven. But when does theism turn into man's uninhibited cry to the outside?
The outside.
Precisely. Marcus, please relay onto Steven what I meant by the outside.
What? Dude, you gotta start speaking fucking English eventually. You gotta.
Now our friend, like any prophet, is slow of speech. But how can one give expression to what is? With words? With laughter? Is there a difference to begin with?
Well, that's because words, like, words are... I mean, words have letters? Or they... I don't fucking know, man.
It means a lot to me. You mean a lot to me.
You mean a lot to me. I... really.
Sullivan played with his hands on her thigh. He looked down at them, immovably, nodded at nothing. His hands were moving.
Things aren't so bad when you're here. Yeah?
She placed both of her hands on the crook of Sullivan's elbow. Stephen watched Sullivan's eyes open fully. He saw a muted smile, moving nothing but his lips.
See, that's the thing about life, my brothers. What exactly even is it, anyway? Life and all its clandestine snakeheads, that pack of definitions, they can never become us, truly. Not with reality, the reality that anyone can see if they're blind enough. Reality that is right there, literally right there, just waiting for us to realize ourselves into it. To realize that we're already in it. And it's too late to leave now.
Percy looked at Stephen, smiling.
Are you going to immerse yourself? Are you going to slip quietly into the black waters? Or will you resist it? Fight against the tide that pulls you. That wants you. Pulls you towards the truest self there is.
His eyes were dim, half closed, immovably fixed.
Go ahead. Join them. Join the Illumined, Phil. The ones who bask in the light and think that makes them iridescent. They look in the mirror and see what they like. You know what I mean? Like it means anything. But they're not looking close enough. They only see through the kaleidoscope of their own mantras.
Shit. That shit is... That's some good shit, man.
Or... You can just let it in. Just close your eyes and let in the unspeakable. Just pretend that you're nothing. And become... Nothing. Let the abyss look into you.
Percy lowered his face, darkness swallowing his features. He looked back up at Stephen with a knowledgeable grin.
You'll see it if you look. You'll see it if you acquaint yourself with that darkness. Back your eyelids. Trust me. You'll see it in your room. It knows you. But shit, man. I mean, who really knows it? We don't even know who we are. We claim to know who we are as humans, like we could ever know. Like we're right. I know who we are.
Come to me.
We are the stranger.
Percy and Marcus whipped around, and Stephen followed. The sound had come from the laundry room, past Wiley's bedroom, two walls away.
I got it.
Stephen rose and went into the hallway. He walked past the staircase door, turned right into the thin space of the laundry room. Lit emerald by the overhanging light. Its walkway was choked by a washer, a dryer, and two girls ravishing, almost biting. Stephen slipped through them, through the smell of vodka. He walked past the washer and dryer. He found the origin of the sound. On the tile lay a 2x4, left in chunks broken from impact. And what appeared to be a book lying face down beneath it. Stephen looked up, saw the familiar hole ripped in the corner of the ceiling, bearing boards and crawl space. The wall must have been shaken by the vibrations of the music, or someone walking upstairs, or Percy stumbling against the opposite wall, causing it to shake and drop out. Something. Stephen bent over, picked it up. He brushed chips of wood and sawdust off the front. It resembled a journal, and its pages were ruffled, bent, even stained in some areas. A white space on the front, designated for an owner's name, read, Skin Miser. A character study by Miles Dorrance.
It's me.
Stephen turned around. It had come from the two girls, uttered between breath and kiss. It had been said in perfect simultaneity. Their tongues continued to intertwine, and the music continued to drown everything. And the stairs above Stephen continued to creak, and the voices continued to shout, laugh, scream. Stephen didn't really hear any of it. He was instead staring at the book, at its cover, at the lines of handwriting scrawled upon its face, at both of the two names written on it. Stephen opened his eyes. The ceiling was cast with pallid, anemic light. He reached for his glasses, put them on, turned toward the window on his left. A wide, expansive view of blackened, decaying houses, like the bones of a long-dead animal. He pulled the sheets up closer to his chin, felt the chill from a crack in the upper corner of his window. The yawn was unexpectedly close. He turned to his right. A woman sat cross-legged on the floor, stretched her thin, tattooed arms up above a head of thick black hair. She adjusted her wide, square-framed glasses, looked up at Stephen from beneath shadows on her eyes. He gripped the sheets even closer, pulling them over his body.
Hey, you. Sorry, didn't mean to startle you.
Yeah, it's all right. How'd you end up in here?
Oh, hell. How would I know that? Last thing I remember, I think I was looking for someone who said they had more Molly or something. Guess at some point I ended up here.
Yeah. Well.
But on a night like last night, well, I think we all end up somewhere without knowing how we got there.
It's okay.
So, how'd you end up here?
He looked back up at her. She held the eye contact, tenderly.
This is my room.
Well, you know, here, though, like, how'd you end up here, or... or are you like me and can't quite recall?
She rubbed her eyes sleepily, again held the eye contact. She wore black mascara, a black tank top, black cloth shorts. The wave of her hair half curtained her shoulders, one of them lined with another thin, uncolored tattoo.
It's a long story.
He reached over to his nightstand, groped about his alarm clock, his letter opener, finally finding his phone. It was a 7:45. He looked up again at the woman, then away from her, his eyes landing as if intentionally onto the book, lying open on his desk across the room. The woman struggled with stairs but managed herself out the front door, wrapped in a delta-patterned knit cardigan. Stephen scanned the living room, found nothing unfamiliar. 4 bodies on the purple-stained carpet, 3 female, 1 entangled in the arms of a male. A girl sat on the couch, furiously texting, emitting occasional tearful sniffles. Audible vomiting in the kitchen, distant. A gash in the ceiling bearing wooden boards like bones. The crooked slant of the wall-mounted television, the already undone Christmas lights dangling, the jagged circle of cracks in the wall that had been there longer than any of them. A room decidedly autonomous from that of the previous night. Pairs of girls and infrequent men herded out the front door, awaited rides. To Stephen's right, Wiley and Jeffrey leaned against the wall behind the couch, passing a half-consumed blunt.
And just who was that little birdie, Stephen?
She just got lost last night. Passed out of my room for some reason.
Bianca. I remember her. Been here a couple times before. Got a stronger taste for goose than I thought was possible.
Who invited her?
Her tits did. What do you think?
Where are the others?
Not sure. I know Marcus went home. Pretty sure Percy's on the roof again. Another one of his contacts with the cosmos or whatever the fuck.
He does that every fucking time.
And Sullivan! Sullivan better not show his fucking face if he's here. I'll put a few fucking holes in it.
What do you do?
Same thing he does every fucking night, only he didn't have the decency to take you to his own place this time around. Now I gotta wash my goddamn sheets again.
Even I have the decency to use my own room.
Of course you do. And apparently so does Steven.
Nothing happened. I don't even know who she is. I fell asleep before she even came into my room.
Hey, it's cool, bro. I hear keeping pussy from Jeffrey is all the rage these days.
Fuck off.
Besides...
Wiley turned back to Steven.
Not like she's the first coke slut that's gone after you.
The cold came into his mind. Everything inside was tepid. The ends of his mouth didn't feel to be there. The sinews and patches of his face. Wiley licked one of his teeth. He might as well have, so. It was by that tongue that everything inside Stephen was pulled out. Out from inside the nothing where everything was kept. Out where he could see it again. The tile hospital floor. The long names of chemicals. Unanswered phone calls. Questions of future. The Denver altitude. The cold. The cold in his mind.
So, what happened with that redhead?
Oh, nothing. She just wanted to check out the backyard.
Backyard?
Yeah. Them hammocks make pretty good swings, turns out.
Oh my god, Wiley, what in God's name?
Yeah, nothing opens them up quite like some good blow.
Yeah, great.
Ah, shut it, I didn't break the trees or anything.
Whatever.
Give me salt over this man, for real.
I ain't giving you anything. Good job not breaking the trees or whatever.
Speaking of break, the fuck was that sound last night? Did something break in the house?
Yeah, what was that about?
Oh, yeah, part of the ceiling busted in the laundry room, in that hole that's been up there.
Fucking great. Yet another thing I'll have to wait a lifetime for the landlord to fix.
Something fell out, too, actually.
Fell out?
Yeah, a book? A journal, actually.
Who left their journal in this place? Is it Sullivan's, just full of little bitch tears?
Yeah, that'll get the girls into bed. My bed, apparently.
No, it's none of ours.
Steven looked down. Recalled.
Do any of you know who Miles Dorrance is?
There was silence. Frowns and shaking heads.
Wait. Maybe. Hang on.
Jeffrey drew his phone, typed. A few seconds, and he spoke again.
Yeah, this fucking guy.
Who is he?
He was an actor. I forget what happened to the guy, and it doesn't seem to say here either. Pretty active in the 80s for a bit, never really made it big. Sort of like Daniel Day-Lewis. You know, he didn't do many roles, but the ones that he did were, like, pretty intense.
Why don't I know who he is, then?
Well, I guess he never got as big as Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, he doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
What the fuck do you know about him, then?
I heard about him in acting class, and I found...
How'd those classes work out for you?
Oh, fuck off. I heard about him there then. I was reading this old-ass article about him. Let me find it. Yeah, here. Dorrance was one of the biggest modern proponents of method acting, and he is greatly known for having gone into long, elaborate exercises to immerse himself in his roles. This approach, however, was one that many directors and producers found too unnecessarily time-consuming for pictures and performances that had strict deadlines. and for this reason, Dorrance was only cast by a few niche independent filmmakers. His most well-known method acting experiment was a self-imposed exile in 1989 to a house in Denver, Colorado. He never revealed to the press his exact location for an attempt to craft his own original character. Wait.
Jeffrey looked up slowly.
What? Wait. That was here?
No fucking way. What? How did no one tell us this when we moved in? Did he just never tell anyone? I mean, I guess a landlord can keep a secret as good as anyone. The people in this neighborhood wouldn't give a shit, but fucking still.
Oh my god. But you, he like if you were like, if you.
Sorry, Jeffrey. Could you repeat that? That was very profound.
I'm getting there. Like, you'd think like we would have like fucking found this out a while ago, though, right? I mean, he'd have to have left some signs, and I looked at every crevice of this place before we signed the lease.
Well, not every crevice, apparently, because this dude's diary has just been sitting around in here.
Well, I still checked, man. I mean, I checked everywhere.
Yeah, the thing was in the floorboards. The crawl space between the first and second floor. It fell right out.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, man. God, that's so wild. Jesus, that guy was probably in his fucking element in this place.
Maybe. That or just straight up nuts. What does the journal say?
I didn't read it. But the cover said something like,
Stephen remembered the title. His tongue knew the syllables. It didn't feel like the kind of word that could be said out loud.
It said, Skin Miser. A character study by Miles Dorrance.
Skin Miser.
The word went from mouth to mouth. Seemed to echo. Stephen even felt himself murmuring it again, whispering it, without meaning to do so. As it passed over his lips, it occurred to him that it was the first time he had actually spoken it, and in a sense it felt to be the first time the word had ever been spoken. The only other person ever to say it, he considered, must have been Miles Dorrance himself. Stephen thought of how it must have felt then, on Dorrance's tongue and pen, speaking the name as Stephen was right in that moment, a name etched from his artistry, born of his self, a name written with thought and intention and sentience behind it, carved onto the incertitude of the page.
Badass title.
The time was 6:43 when Stephen rose, checked his phone screen. He lapsed back onto the living room floor. He thought, calculated how long he had been laying there, beside the five other bodies. Just 2 minutes short of 6 hours. He turned his head, looked at them. They had not moved. Could not. plastic that had contained a quarter of weed was discarded on the floor. A few specks littered around it. A wrapper that had held 25 red pills held 17, and another that had held 30 white ones was down to 14. They lay between the bodies, awaiting the next usage. The end was never exactly in sight.
Man, we lived here like, what? What, 18 months, is it?
19 next Thursday.
Man. So do you think that maybe that, like, the first girl we fucked in this house has had a child by now? Like, what if I have a son, man?
There was no reply. Jeffrey's face went slack again, eyes glazing. None of their eyes were closed. But they were not exactly open either. Not exactly eyes. Stephen turned back to the ceiling, away from them. The effort was enough to have been pain, if it could have been. With the ceiling and the walls and the house so blank. Just as blank as the eyes and his body and the world. It did not feel like he was anywhere at all. He did not know what it would feel like if he were. Would it feel like the others did? Like the smoke and the pills? Would it feel like he had before then? Like he ever had before. Did he even have the self in him for it? He didn't feel he did. Didn't feel there was really anything but that floor and that weight if they actually were there. Didn't feel he could have ever been anywhere, outside him or inside him. Didn't feel he could have ever been anything because that was being. Didn't feel the carpet under his fingers or the air above his face or the self inside his body. Didn't feel. Didn't feel at all.
Numb. Man, I'm fucking fucking numb.
Silence refilled the room, refilled Stephen's body, a rising tide that almost came from him, almost was him. He stared still at the house since it was all there was. Before then and after then, even as far back as the moment Miles Dorrance had taken up residence and changed its history forever. Stephen lay. Did he see what Stephen looked at? Had he thought, when he slid the diary between the crawl space, what Stephen had thought as he approached the fractured ceiling, his eyes resting along the same cracks and crevices, the same brokenness. What had the house been to him? Had he been? At all?
God. I swear I'm not gonna be moving for a fucking lifetime.
Stephen heard the sentence. It clung to his ears, to his eyelids. And as those eyelids closed from the sentence's weight, sinking him into sleep, or whatever alternate consciousness it was that felt the same as every other mood, or thought, or impulse, he couldn't help but agree with it.
What was I supposed to do? Remain as I was, namely that I wasn't? Let face by face pass me by, assuring them that the one I wore was, indeed, my own? Continue to permit a chisel being run down my formless hunk of flesh at every glance that was paid me, carving a shape I had no control over, on a surface I had no command of? I'm not that person. If I know anything of myself, I know that much. I'm the kind of person who gets buried. A living corpse looking for acceptance. A walking cadaver begging to be seen as human. One of the many hostages of the industry, but the only one who realized that the ransom need not be paid. Or if they do realize it, they don't care. They'd rather keep something close to life than find immortality at risk of death. Or perhaps they fear it, though I'm not sure what exactly it is. That when they look into the watery mirror of the self, they'll find something they don't like, whatever that might be. I can't fathom it. All things added up, I'd rather die with myself than live without. And if that's what need happen, so be it. I write this from the floor of what appears to have been intended as a den. It's cold here. I've brought almost nothing with me. Bare mattress, toiletries, a few shirts, a jacket, and one pair of jeans. As a result, the floor is an uncompromising bare. And the walls seem to stare their emptiness at me, the glaring obligation of blank canvases. Walking these floors, I feel out of place, as if there's something I should be doing other than what I am. But there's nothing here. A house of empty rooms, empty silence, but a very present sense of purpose. Perhaps that's why this blank, anonymous environment feels like home. Or else it will, soon enough. This entry marks the first day, already a relief from my preceding life in the outside world, an easing of a muscle that should never have been engaged. Work is soon to begin. I will refrain from further use of this diary until later in the process, perhaps in a number of days. But I wanted to put pen to page, if only to give a before shot of the process I'm about to begin. As for the after shot, I can hardly speak. By that point, I'm not sure this diary will even be required any further. These pages of creation and redefinition cemented in my memory into my core. I may burn it to fully exterminate all trace of this process of reincarnation. Like cleaning off the afterbirth, making the creation become the implicit reality, and permanently erase my name from this world. My former name. a name to be deleted along with all the tempestuous turmoil entangled inside its syllables. We actors tend to file through name after name, not discriminating which we choose as our actual roles. I occasionally wonder which of my roles, dating back to the age of 5, is the role in which I posited the most of what could be called, in crude and rudimentary understatement, me. Some would say that as an actor I have no name and that I only exist to tell the stories of those long gone or that never existed to begin with. This is the perspective of the director, the playwright, the so-called artist behind a CEO's desk. But who is a higher authority on this than the actor himself? I can't give that up so flippantly. I only have one canvas, and if I am to truly free it from the blankness that covers its face and rip forth from the womb of the page, I will need something more, paint to be added on the blank face, a pretense to eventually birth reality. I couldn't stay where I was. There has to be something more. If there isn't, I am not certain there will be anything at all more of me. They all said not to. They all said that the truth lies in the letters M-Y-L-E-S, and that was the end of it. A brand name, a sticker slapped onto a package no one can sign for. The objectification of that which is immaterial and abstract, the desperate shoving of a square hole onto a circular peg. All this was shown to me as the way, the answer, as just the way things are, and the defiance of it, a spiritual, artistic practice I see as the only possible response, labeled deadly, dangerous, and left at that. Where, then, is there a place for me here in this amalgamated mosaic of conflicting realities? This fray into which no one lasts longer than it takes to be redefined, transfigured, and killed before death. A fate no less bitter than the alleged lethality of that base human right to be oneself. I had to leave them all. Going out to find and not fabricate my true self. And this house is my entrance point, the place where I will be found, I will be known, I will be saved. I will. The craving came gradually, growing not stronger, but clearer as time went on. A thirst that is constant, but only as powerful as one's recognition of it is. It crept upon me in a prolonged approach, drawn out, but better still than it is for most, as it was at least existent in me. It brought with it the belated sting of a neglected role, a long-present need that, for whatever insular plastic reason, had gone ungratified all these years. I can only pray that this exigent purpose burning inside me is the same one that hides in the folds of this house, sleeps deep inside its foundation, and whose presence I can very nearly feel in the unseen corners and the unheard voices, a sentient intent hanging behind a fabricated quietude. I am not afraid. It is everyone around me that seems to fear what disaster I might invoke by doing this. I often wonder why. One of my colleagues called method acting the enemy of the art and the artist alike, equally harmful to both. But if method acting, by definition, is the implementation of truth into one's character, how can it not be art? Reality is the sole purpose of all art. But as soon as that calling comes too close to burning us, a vessel with no say in defining what reality is, then the art becomes abominable, too controversial, simply because it appears threatening to us. But if pretending to be someone, something else than what you truly are, is art, then what are we? Do we have an identity? Or do we pretend, filling in the space where an identity was supposed to be, but for some reason buried in the halls of our origins was never given? It is in these halls that I roam, reaching out into the darkness, groping and feeling for my own hands. Though the precise methods may differ between me and my fellow artists, I think everyone in the theater and the world alike will inevitably come to the conclusion that you cannot be yourself in this world. It is only necessary to become someone else. And by doing this, we may get a feel for what the former truly is. It is for this reason I am an actor. The precise opposite of the thespian stereotype into which far too many souls fall. This is nothing new. I've believed this for as long as I have believed. But too many years of waiting for the plastic manufactured reality of the theater to, in some indirect way, find itself at the doorstep of truth have left me with no other option than this. Method acting has always been a crucial part of my artistic approach, but for too long has that small, meager, fragmented fragment of my truth been caught up in the orders and domination of directors, writers, and the sovereign dollar bill. With these words in permanent ink, I here relinquish all allegiance to any such script or libretto of another mind, any mind that is not mine, a mind to which I can give nothing of real worth. This diary will be my script, written based off the actions of I, the actor, in a reversed paradigm of show business. I have only one mind to seek that I am entitled to seek, nothing else. What else can anyone own? I seek only that which is mine, and nothing else could possibly be, not even the diary in my very hand. You, reading this after I have written it, you are now in full ownership of the secrets in these pages. Limiting myself to the matters of my own mind, solitude is obviously paramount. This house is ideal, and the neighborhood is as well. I don't know if anyone would guess that I am here, or even feel the impulse to do so. After all, this house isn't for me. I do not even think I am here. In a physical sense, sure, this building is where I reside, and if someone were to break down the door right now, they would find me sitting on the floor, scribbling in a notebook, present. But will they not know, on some innate human level, that I am not here? That it is not Miles Dorrance that they see, but an empty vessel left behind while I dive into the ocean of which my human form is but a drop, the source of all I am, the place from which I came into this world. Covert living is a comfort, sure, but I stand confident that none will ever find me here simply because I am not here. In fact, no one is, and none shall be until I am finished, fully developed into the part I was meant to play, and the truest life I've ever lived will finally walk these floors. My aim is simple: to find, in the disillusioned sea of my many characters, one that I can truly call my own. A role to inhabit without struggle or inauthenticity. The reality I have been denied by the burlesque masquerade madness I have been trapped in for so long. To embody this character in the fullness of flesh through meditation, self-discipline, and technique designed to search the deepest recesses of my mind and inspire them with this enigmatic presence I know absolutely nothing about, and yet that beckons me forth, deeper into the shadows of these hallways. I seek it, but I can also feel its concurrent call, seeking me in these rooms, and in the rooms of my mind. Its energy is quiet, dormant, like it's waited lifetimes for me to discover it. At night, while I, or the character, is trying to lay ourselves to sleep, I lift my arms, eyes closed, and blindly feel for it in the air, waiting for it to touch me. I have yet to feel it, but I feel certain it will at least visit soon, some way or another. You can only call somebody so many times before they find you, on purpose or by accident. And surely there is in me some kernel of familiarity, a moiety that can only be completed by the pieces it holds, that draws it closer, closer to my bedside in the eye-closed night. Perhaps the most difficult task is naming the character, especially so early when I have yet to reach it in the form of mental or physical contact. But as I pen these words, syllables repeatedly slip into my brain, and I fumble to piece them together into one full name. In my sir, Meissenser, Skesser, Mizen, Skenser, Maids. Skin miser. There it is. My character has a name. And with it, so do I. Skin miser. It is I, and I it. I hope that knowing its name may speed its approach along. In the meantime, I will meditate, delve into myself, and patiently wait. Wait for me.
We hope you enjoyed this preview of the current season of Hemophobia. This was episode 1. You can find Hemophobia wherever you're listening right now, and we'll have links in the show notes. Be sure to give them a follow. Season 2 is releasing right now, and season 1 is already finished. So plenty of horrors await you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon with more 13.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically,
and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.